Hello everybody and welcome to episode 1 of season 2 of Mind Clickers. Mind Clickers is a podcast where I chat with athletes, coaches, management staff, shoutcasters and the like about the psychological and performance demands of esports. I'm your host Lachlan Parker, a sport and exercise science student currently studying here in Melbourne, Australia, with a passion for athlete well-being and also performance as well. I've always been passionate about online gaming and esports, previously competing in Hearthstone and in StarCraft, and also previously in Counter-Strike Global Offense and Call of Duty Pro Mod. In the following episode, I have a chat with Matt Senior, who is an ex-Paladins player and returned professional shoutcaster, currently casting CSGO and Valorant, and also recently had the opportunity to shoutcast the Rise of Valor Valorant tournament. Matt provides an insight into the realm of professional shoutcasting and how to remain calm and collected under high-pressure, stressful situations. Matt also reflects on the importance of having proper grammar and the ability to engage audiences and tell stories. Matt finally summarizes with some tips and tricks that can help upcoming shoutcasters who are interested in taking their first step to deal and overcome any potential problems that may arise. Thank you very much for everyone that supported me throughout season 1. Let's make season 2 bigger and better with some more exciting guests. I hope you enjoy episode 1 and I can't wait to see you in episode 2. Thank you. Hello everybody and welcome back to season 2 episode 1 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2020. I'm joined today with Matthew Senior, who is a current shoutcaster and commentator for a variety of games, which we will touch on later. How are you going today, mate?
I'm doing really well.
Good to hear. How's everything where you are?
Well, living in Melbourne, it's certainly starting to ease up a bit, but hopefully we'll continue on that track.
Yeah, definitely. I'm in Melbourne myself, and lockdown's starting to get out of everyone's starting to slowly make that approach back to society. But hopefully, we can all get out and back to our usual routines again.
We're certainly praying for that. That's for sure.
So I guess we'll just kick it off with a bit of background about yourself, just kind of like a nice general history of your history in shoutcasting, and even maybe gaming as well, and why you decided to get into shoutcasting.
Yeah, so in terms of gaming itself, it really all started when I was a young boy of about 8 years old or something. My older brother was playing Counter-Strike 1.6 on the computer, and he'd let me play a few times. He used to play like the gun game servers, and I really just sparked an interest from there, all just from looking over his shoulder, seeing what he was doing, and it all just looked really fascinating to me. And then yeah, everything really just started to kick off from there.
Fantastic. So is that the type of, is that what you got started shoutcasting, the original CS scene?
No, so I didn't get started into Counter-Strike per se. So I did try and play a bit of Counter-Strike competitively back in 2016, 2015, around there. But eventually I fell out of that due to study commitments and moved more towards like a Overwatch type game, which then eventually transitioned into Paladins. And in Paladins, it was definitely great to see how that scene flourished. I believe you actually talked to Rice a bit about his history in Paladins. And yeah, I've certainly intertwined into that. Yeah, I used to play against him back when I was a semi-professional player. Like, my team was Corvidae at the time. We were one of the top teams in the region. We were about top 5 or top 6. We weren't the best team, but we certainly did our best. But yeah, eventually I slipped out of professional play just due to uni commitments, because I was studying IT at the time, and I just didn't have the time to play anymore. It was all just a bit too much from there. But after that, I eventually ended up getting asked by one of my former teammates if I wanted to help him out by shoutcasting a little community tournament thing. And I was like, oh, I've never done anything like this before. All right, I'll give it a shot. And then, yeah, everything really just started to play together from there. Like, I found that I actually really enjoyed it, and it didn't take as much time away from everything as playing, because it would be just like an hour or two on the weekend as compared to obviously practicing and scrimming every single night, just really grinding it out. But yeah, it all just really kicked off from there in 2017.
So yeah, that sounds really good. I love the fact that, you know, obviously there, it's same with myself personally. I was really into CS and Overwatch around that time as well, but that, I think that's around the time I started to get really serious with uni, just like yourself. And, you know, I would have loved to really transition into, you know, really taking, pushing the boundaries of ranked, especially in League and in Counter-Strike, and specifically StarCraft as well. That was a passion of mine really at the time. But as you said, those study commitments do outweigh the gaming side hobby. But I think it's really awesome that you found that extra side ability to, you know, understand that shoutcasting is a viable option. And, you know, B, it doesn't take, you know, as you said, as much effort to shoutcast a game in comparison to playing. You know, obviously a lot of pro players have to commit, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours a day, more for some people, for some games. But yeah, shoutcasting, you know, might be one of those things where it doesn't take so much of a commitment. So in regards to, you know, the first couple of games you started to shoutcast, was there something that really clicked that was like, oh yeah, I really like this? Or was it something that, you know, thought, oh, we'll see how it goes?
Yeah, so at first with shoutcasting Paladins, it was really just, well, oh, we'll see how it goes, because obviously my former teammate Disobey asked me, like, just to see how it would go, and I thought that I'd be commentating with him. And it was, it was like that for the first couple of streams, but then eventually he just stopped talking at all. So it was all just the Matsy show from there. But yeah, no, it really sparked a flame in me. Like, I found that, yeah, I really enjoyed commentating and just being able to push out that type of content for the community. Like, especially in Paladins, I was the only like community shoutcaster in the Oceanic region. And
wow,
it was really great to see just how many people would show up and would just be really happy to see their games being streamed. Like, that really held a special place in my heart, being able to make so many people happy.
For sure. I can definitely reflect on that now that you bring it up, because I used to do back on Cybergamer, some Modern Warfare 2, Black Ops 1 and Black Ops 2 scrimming. And, you know, it was one thing to see, you know, oh, we're going to a scrim Friday night. And then it was another thing to be like, oh, the game's being shoutcasted. And suddenly there was so much more pressure because, you know, A, someone else is watching it and they're actually voicing over and you might get featured on that. And that's, like, you know, that kind of, I guess, excitement, because it brings that extra level. And B, you know, it's the fact that, well, I'm going to get witnessed by a lot more people. Maybe there might be more people watching. It might be on stream, might be on Twitch. So it definitely, I think having the shoutcasting element versus just having the pure gameplay definitely adds that extra, I guess, enthusiasm for audiences. In regards to shoutcasting as a whole, you know, what is, how do you try and engage with the audiences?
So there's a lot of different ways that you can really engage with the audience. Like, some people may have different takes on it, but obviously with a streaming platform like Twitch, for example, you can see that people are going to put their individual comments on the match in the chat, and you might be able to engage in that during, say, some of the downtime in a match. Like, you might be able to provide a bit of analysis into a play if they're asking about it, or even just like agree with something that they may bring to the table. But there's also obviously bringing the game itself to the people, and being able to keep the people engaged definitely is important. Like, you need to be able to manage the pacing of how you're delivering each key point, as well as trying to maintain that natural flow and rapport if you did have a co-caster on for the broadcast.
Yeah, so, you know, what are the big differences between having a co-caster versus doing it yourself?
Well, with having a co-caster, it definitely does ease a bit of the strain on yourself, because obviously if it is just a one-man operation, then there's more pressure to cover all of the spectrum of things on your own. Mm. And so it may actually really harm the broadcast. Like with having two casters, like a play-by-play, for example, and then also the color or analysis caster, you're able to really play off each other. Like, for example, your color caster might be talking about how the teams are setting themselves up to move into a round. And then eventually, as things start to amp up a little bit, they get a little bit more excited, and then they throw it over to the play-by-play caster who can really deliver the artillery to the viewers.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think that's it's definitely one of those things that it really enhances the gameplay. And like kind of what I mentioned earlier, it's just that extra augmented effect for the audiences, and it definitely builds that hype, as you said. So when you did your first Paladin Shoutcast, you know, having that previous knowledge as a player, do you think that really helped you to, understand the mechanics and understand the, you know, provide you with the extra ability to shoutcast more efficiently?
I definitely agree that having a background in actually playing the game at a serious level definitely does attribute towards your ability to shoutcast it, because you mm-hmm. have that knowledge of how the game is meant to be played. Like, you know exactly how the abilities should be thrown out. It's not just all higgledy-piggledy all over a capture point, for example. Like, you know that a team should be pushing those two players towards that side objective to perhaps distract the rest of the enemy team whilst the rest are trying to get behind enemy lines.
Yeah, and, you know, what about for, you know, when a new game comes out? You know, obviously there's no knowledge generated from that. So, you know, what's the approach for shoutcasters there? Is it more so I'll get in and play the game myself, I'll really get, developed within the game, I'll watch more VODs, I'll see what other shoutcasters are talking about, and maybe I can leech onto some of what they're saying?
I feel like the most important thing, at least from my perspective, obviously other people may have different opinions on it, but I feel like to have a proper understanding of a game, you really need to take some time to actually play it, because mm-hmm. like you can only understand so much just by watching the game. Like being able to actually see exactly how, say, a weapon in a game may work, like the Vandal in Valorant, being able to
yep.
really analyze the spray pattern and see how that might be comboed up with, say, a smoke coming out from the jet character, like definitely mm-hmm. does give you a good understanding. Like VODs definitely do help as well, because if you're able to see how other shoutcasters are tackling the game, then it definitely does give you a bit of leeway in terms of, okay, so they're approaching it with this kind of style, maybe I can adapt that into my approach, or perhaps you could try and adapt your approach from another game if you have a background in, say, Counter-Strike like myself. Then because Valorant and Counter-Strike are very similar games, then obviously you can adapt a pretty similar style there.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, just adding to what you mentioned, having that, I guess, internal knowledge from playing, you know, for example, on Dust 2 on Counter-Strike, if you're holding on B, you know that maybe it's a save round, maybe they might go for a B push. Having that knowledge playing as a player in comparison going into it fresh, I think maybe those little slight knowledge, I guess, opportunities and those, you know, little extra things you learn just from playing the game naturally will allow you to obviously shoutcast better. And maybe suggest, you know, maybe what the next round they're going to do, or, you know, the next play. And that'll obviously enhance the experience as well.
Definitely agree with you there. Like, if you're able to really set things up in people's minds, then it really depicts a great picture of how things may play out. Because at the end of the day, casting is like storytelling. We are the music makers and we are the dreamers of dreams. Like, we're going to be telling the story the players want to be heard.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess, you know, bringing in that storytelling, how do you really develop those skills? Is it more so just repetition, shoutcasting, getting more experience? Is it one of those things that you maybe practice by yourself? How do you develop those skills to really be able to go into a big match and be really equipped to, I guess, deal with any different scenarios that might unravel?
So a really important thing I feel is having an expansive vocabulary. So being able to really have a lot of ammunition in that space definitely does assist in telling the stories. Like myself, I know that I like to note down a few words which I find intriguing, which I feel would definitely boost the broadcast based on their definitions. And also with that, you're able to really stop repetition, because I find that a lot of casters will obviously struggle using the same words over and over again. And I feel like that does hurt the broadcast a little bit. So being able to really work on your vocabulary is definitely an important skill there.
Yeah, just being able to have those expansive different vocabulary to use. And obviously, you know, situations occur frequently. And as you said, you know, some broadcasters might use the same phrases, and that might be mundane for the viewers and actually ruin their viewing experience because the shoutcaster is just saying the same thing over and over again. So in regards to, I guess, you know, looking at it from a whole perspective, esports in general, and the opportunity that shoutcasters bring upon, so within the next 5 years, obviously there's going to be a lot more games coming out to the agenda, you know. Recently, we had that massive BR boom, and that's a lot more shoutcasters getting involved, getting engaged, just because it's one of those outlets that, I guess, a battle royale is really easy to shoutcast because it's shared knowledge among it, and there's only those small little variables that differ between games. So how do you see everything unraveling within the next 5 years?
I feel that in the next 5 years, things are certainly going to continue on the upward climb. Like, you compare esports now to, say, when League of Legends Season 1, like, World Championships were on, and you really start to see a huge spike in viewership as compared to all the way back then. It's really great to see just how much growth esports as a whole has gained, because obviously there's a lot more people who are starting to get involved, starting to actually take it seriously. Like, at first maybe people weren't so sure about it, but now that it's really had some time, people have invested a lot of hard work, a lot of blood, sweat and tears into it. I feel like we're definitely on the rise overall.
Yeah, right. And you know, I guess as we've seen that big exponential growth in the past couple of years, it's only going to get bigger, as you said, and it's going to become more mainstream. More people are going to be tuning into Twitch or whatever streaming platform people are viewing. There's going to be maybe bigger and better tournaments. And alongside that, obviously, you know, there's going to be bigger, more amped up and bigger, you know, obviously possibilities for shoutcasting to happen, because the events will become more exciting and that'll create a bigger outlet and more enthusiasm for audiences to participate in as well.
The more opportunities definitely will come into play as more events become available. But obviously, with opportunities, you definitely do need to really put your best foot forward, because you may find with some shoutcasters, they may actually be discouraged to really try and have a go at going for some of these opportunities, because they see these really big names that have been involved in the majority of events in the region. And it really becomes quite a daunting experience for, say, a newer shoutcaster, because they think, oh, I might not get this opportunity anyway, just because, say, like, this big caster always gets these events.
Yeah, I think, you know, you look at some of the CS events, especially in the OC region, and the same shoutcasters are often seen doing them over and over again. And, you know, I guess where does that provide the opportunity for new shoutcasters? So, you know, those people looking to get into the shoutcasting game, what advice would you have for them? Is it just more so developing your own shoutcasting skills by yourself, maybe uploading some vids of past VODs, shoutcasting over them, and then trying to obviously promote your shoutcasting ability? You know, what's your thoughts about that?
I feel like it's definitely very important to develop your own craft and really set yourself to stand out from the crowd. But also, as opposed or further to developing your own skills, you obviously need to work on a few other things in the back end. Like, for example, some people may have the mindset that they're just going to shoutcast and that's it, and they don't put anything further into it. Whereas when you're trying to go for opportunities and you're trying to really have them become available to you, you need to actually market yourself as well. Like, trying to score a high-key shoutcasting opportunity is like a job interview. Like, you have to sell yourself. You have to sell yourself really, really hard, because there's definitely always going to be alternatives.
Yeah, and I guess that kind of, you know, starts to dig into the competitive market of it. I mean, I myself am not too sure about the competitive, like, disposition of, I guess, of how many people are trying to apply for events, but maybe you can give an insight on that.
So depending on the tier of the event, I guess, like depending on how big it actually is in the grand scheme of things, then obviously you'll see a lot more shoutcasters really trying to shoot their shot, because they know that if it's a more high key event, then obviously there's more chance of them getting that exposure, really getting their name out there, and really could kick off their shoutcasting career.
So in regards to applying for those events, how does the application process work?
So it would really vary from organizer to organizer. Like, for example, some organizers may keep it simple and just have, like, say, a Google form where you just put your name, a little bit about yourself, and obviously why they should choose you. Whereas other organizers, you may need to contact someone directly by email, or even you may just need to know the right people. Like, it really just depends on which organizer's handling the tournament.
Yeah, right. I guess that kind of that variable does add in, you know, who you know, because I know that in a lot of job scenarios, you know, it's more so who you know over what you know. And that also, you know, optimally might in the end be the small step that gets you the role or gets you the job. And, you know, some people might see it as, you know, kind of unfair, but I guess that's just the way some of it rolls. And so in regards to, I guess, you know, bringing in, you know, there's obviously some positives, you know, there's more shoutcasters for more jobs, there's more games that are starting to come out, and that obviously provides more opportunities. But obviously some of the negatives are that, you know, tournaments aren't as often as we'd like. So obviously that means that there's longer periods where, I guess, you know, shoutcasters aren't working in the shoutcasting role, or, you know, if you performed poorly in one shoutcasting scenario, does that really hinder your ability to get, I guess, hired for the next role?
Yeah, so it really does depend on quite a few variables. Like, if you do have some struggles in one of your shoutcasts, it's not the end of the world, because at the end of the day, everybody is constantly learning. Like, it's going to be a never-ending learning experience. And the best way to really improve is by continuing to do it, analyzing your own VODs to really identify patterns. Like, you might continue to say a filler word. Like, for example, when you're really stuck on a point, you might say "and well" or "and that's that" or just any kind of filling sentence. But I feel like in time, if you work on your shoutcasting overall, you'll be able to really take those out of your broadcasts and you'll be able to think of the next sentence on the fly.
Yeah, right. So, you know, for those starting off in shoutcasting, would you, I guess, consider maybe having like a little sheet in front of you with like maybe some key highlights, some key words, some key phrases that you could use during the shoutcast?
I think that would really help. Like, having a list of words that you might want to use during the broadcast certainly can help you out in the long run, because otherwise you may struggle to obviously think on the fly, because obviously starting out, you're not used to really thinking about saying so many different things within quick succession. So definitely having that preparation and writing some notes as you go as well will definitely attribute towards a better broadcast.
Right. And I guess if you reflect on previous broadcasts where, you know, you might have thought, hey, I really liked what I said then, is do you go ahead and write those things down that you really liked so you can maybe use them for future casts?
Yeah, definitely would write down some of the more exciting statements that it might bring. Obviously, you don't want to use them all the time because then it might fall into the trap of repetition. But I definitely would recommend, obviously, trying to write down a few words or sentences that you find have hit the right spot, per se, with the audience, or that you're just feeling really confident and good about in yourself. Because if you're feeling really great when you're shoutcasting, the audience is going to feel that too. They can sense like the energy in your voice. And if you've got a smile on your face, well, you can hear that.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that kind of plays into those both domains of self-confidence and self-efficacy. Obviously, self-efficacy being, you know, the belief that we have in our capacity to perform a particular task. So obviously, in terms of shoutcasting, that may be, you know, I can do these comms really well, I can articulate words really, you know, really great. And then self-confidence just being that more generalized belief in our own ability and I guess effectiveness as a person to, you know, I guess have that overall positive well-being. So how, you know, do you think that having that really self-confidence and that self-efficacy to bring to the role really helps to make the shoutcast more positive?
I feel like self-confidence is definitely important when you're shoutcasting, because you may find that obviously with the like some opportunities being afforded to say other shoutcasters rather than yourself really can start to chip away at like the mental well-being of a shoutcaster. And I feel like it's definitely important, even if you do have shortcomings, to still believe in yourself and give it your best shot. Because otherwise you are going to fall into a trap. So it's very important that you do take care of yourself.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess that also leads on nicely into, I guess, having that optimal level of arousal. So, you know, prior to a big event, did you ever feel anxious or, you know, really unsettled about, you know, the event? Or was it also, or was it always just, you know I can do it. I have my previous experience. I know what to talk about. I can smash it.
So commentating online, definitely you feel a bit more relaxed because you may be just commentating from home. So obviously you're in your own comfort space. Whereas say if you're commentating a big event, like for example, when I was commentating at the PAX Australia LAN in 2017 for Paladins, when I cast Rice's team, there was definitely a lot of nervousness and anxiety in the initial stages of that day. But after you really start to do it, that all just fades away, at least for me. Like I find that it's all just, you know, my mind just maybe instilling some doubt. But after you really start to get pushed to shove, then you start to really do what you're best at.
Yeah, right. And I guess if you reflect on those previous experience when you first shoutcasted Rice's game of Paladins, can you see a big difference between, you know, then and now?
There certainly is a major difference between then and now. Like back then, I really was still just trying to get a grasp on things. I didn't really know what I wanted my identity as a shoutcaster to be. Like, I definitely found that after I'd done the commentating for the LAN tournament there, that really put me on a path of confidence. Like I started to really put a lot more energy into my broadcasts. And then moving forward to the online Paladins Global series is where I really started to push out some of my best content at the time.
So looking at the past when Paladins slowly started to, I guess, decrease the amount of tournaments they had, some of the developers started to slowly stray away from the Paladin scene. You know, what was your thought process about that? Was that the such that I'm not going to be able to shoutcast Paladins anymore? I'm going to have to look for a new game potentially. How did you approach that?
So as time went on, you definitely did see a rise and fall of Paladins from my perspective. Like there was a lot of focus globally initially and things were great. Like as Rice, I'm sure, has touched on, like things were really, really good for a while, but then eventually the developer slowly diverted their attention away from some of the like smaller regions like Oceania and Southeast Asia, and just really centralized the focus towards North America and Europe. And that definitely hindered the opportunities, especially for players of like the other regions. Like everyone was very vocal of their discontent towards the decision making there.
And so after that happened, was that, what was the thought process about finding a new game to potentially shoutcast?
So at that point in time, I really evaluated a few things like in my personal life and realized that I really needed to like just take a step back for a little bit, because obviously I needed to get my own affairs in order before I continued to figure out what was the next step. So that ended up resulting in about a year break between when I shoutcasted the next game. So I stopped towards the end of like 2017, towards the start of 2018. And then eventually last year, I'd got a request from one of my colleagues from Paladins, actually, to shoutcast one of their team's CSGO games. And I was like, well, you know what? Why not? I might as well give it a shot, because I'd played the game previously, like in a competitive aspect. And so I had that understanding of the game, and I thought, why not? And then it all really just sparked that excitement again. Like I was really getting my hopes up again that I might be able to actually really get back into the shoutcasting side of things. And that I have, because ever since kicking back off again from there, things have just been absolutely magnificent.
Fantastic. And I guess one of the most interesting things that I have to question is, obviously, you know, taking that step back, you know, allows you to have that more freedom of, you know, getting on board and planning what I want to do next. But obviously when you look to, I guess, game specific choices, Paladins is one of those games where it's like, you know, the five, you know, the arena typed base, and, you know, one of the biggest rivalries of Paladins, you know, obviously, as we know, is Overwatch. So do you think as Paladins started to step back and decrease the amount of, influence and, focus they had on the game, do you think that some of those Paladins players went into the Overwatch League?
I think that some of the players definitely would have made a transition towards either Overwatch or perhaps another game of that nature, because obviously with less focus being put towards Paladins, less updates coming out, like still a majority of the bugs in the game that were there since the early beta days still being in the game to this day, it definitely did raise some questions for players as to really what they wanted to do in terms of their future with Paladins. And then obviously if they did want to really try and establish themselves as a professional esports athlete, then there are more stable options out there, like your Overwatch, for example.
Yeah, right. And I guess, you know, leading into this year, we've seen the release of Valorant. And, you know, that came out and that blew up just because, you know, Riot Games was, you know, backing it and they were the producers of it. So when Valorant came out, did that, you know, obviously having some close relations to CSGO, you know, 5v5, you know, kind of the exact same kind of format with CSGO, just with those extra abilities, kind of like the abilities from Paladins. So when Valorant came out, did that kind of stimulate, hey, this might be a game I really want to get into and shoutcast?
As soon as I saw the announcements for Valorant, there was definitely the spark of excitement there. I was thinking, wow, this looks like a really awesome game. Like the gameplay mechanics were very similar to CSGO, and that definitely made me think that that's a game that I want to get into shoutcasting. And I tried to get into that as early as I possibly could.
Right. And so I guess how did shoutcasting the Rise of the Valor competition come around then?
So shoutcasting the Rise of Valor competition definitely came after some time. Like initially there was some earlier tournaments, like for example, there were some community tournaments here and there, as well as the previous Ignition series. And so with that experience that I'd built up, I was able to work towards that further opportunity with the Fortress in the Rise of Valor. And it definitely did help that I was previously working with them doing a CSGO community night type thing, like every Friday night. I already had that relationship with that organizer, and they already knew what I was capable of.
Yeah, definitely. I can see how that helped you to, I guess, take those previous experiences in CSGO and obviously those early stages of Valorant, and obviously make you a really good candidate for, you know, the big competitions and the big awesome things happening within the OCE scene. So I guess one quick thing that I really have to ask, just because I thought about it recently and I'm curious about it. You know, when you're casting, what do you do when you have a dry throat?
Well, I think this one may be obvious, but drink water. That's really important throughout every broadcast. Like, I always make sure that I've got a full bottle of water next to me, or if there's any lull moments, like a break time of like 5 to 10 minutes, I always fill up my water, make sure to stay as hydrated as possible on the broadcast, because otherwise, like as you've said, you can have a dry throat and it becomes a lot more difficult to really push out your best work, because you really need to make sure that you've got your vocal cords moisturized and hydrated. And then, yeah, you can really push yourself to the limit.
Yeah, right. Awesome. So I guess, you know, looking towards the OCE scene, obviously we've got some really good, strong shoutcasters like yourself engaging with the scene. How does OCE shoutcasting compare to, I guess, North American and Europe shoutcasting?
So I feel like shoutcasting in Oceania, as opposed to shoutcasting in, say, North America or Europe, is like comparing a pond to an ocean, in the sense that obviously there's really not as much opportunity available in Oceania, because our scene as a whole isn't as saturated. Like, there's not as much investment into the respective scenes on this side of the globe, whereas over in North America and Europe, there's a lot more like financial backing, advertisement, and so the opportunities are of an abundance in those respective regions.
Right. And so do you think that potentially some OC shoutcasters may eventually transition into the NA or EU scene?
Definitely would recommend them to do so if they did want to obviously take shoutcasting to the next level. Like, I personally know a few shoutcasters who have been able to take that next step in already just doing some online events for either the North American or European regions. And it certainly has boosted their confidence as a whole, because they're obviously getting their broadcasts out there on a more global scale and building up their own brand and fan base, as well as building their technical knowledge along the way.
Fantastic. Yeah. I definitely think it would be really interesting to see where the obviously esports and shoutcasting scene within OCE develops, because, you know, as the esports scene gets bigger within the next couple of years, obviously with Fortress starting to hopefully open up once everything settles down here in Melbourne, more people start going in and, you know, starting to get more of that esports boom within Australia. Obviously, you know, the requirements for shoutcasting will obviously be there as well. And so it's kind of like it goes hand in hand with the growth. So it'd be really interesting to see obviously where Australia and the Oceania region develops in the next couple of years and how shoutcasting develops alongside it. So I guess one thing that I was really thinking about just before psychologically is, you know, a lot of esports players, before they go into a big game, you know, maybe it's a big contender, maybe it's a series, you know, one of those big, really important ones, maybe it's a current 2v2 going into the final game. You know, they have those kind of psychological warm-ups where they, before they go into the game, maybe they use imagery, maybe they use positive self-statements, maybe they use visualizations. Is there anything you kind of kind of use and adapt yourself, maybe visualizing yourself, really articulating words, really performing well, having high optimal levels of arousal?
So the most important thing is to maintain a positive mental health, because obviously you really need to be feeling good in yourself before you come into a broadcast in order to push out your best work. Like, you really don't want to be coming into it really affected by outside forces, because that definitely does affect what you're going to be able to push out for the people at home. And like, if you're really struggling with something at a point in time, then it definitely will become apparent. And that's why it's important to really just take a moment before your broadcast, or just make sure that you've planned out your day so you really are able to be as relaxed as you can be. So then you can have that more natural flow coming into your broadcasts. Like, I personally like to listen to some music before my broadcasts, just to really relax and wind down before we really start to amp things up.
Fantastic. Yeah, I do know that a lot of players really love using music, just because it provides that external, I guess, external influence on yourself that you can kind of just fade away into. And then once you take them out, that's where it's, you know, that's where you ramp it up. That's where we get serious. And that's, I guess, that's where we start to concentrate. And I guess concentration is one of those really big important factors, especially for shoutcasting, I would imagine, because you have to be really kind of concentrated on the game. And obviously for concentration, there's a couple of different models. We have like a broad external concentration mindset where we can, you know, we can read the environment. We're good at picking up and scanning things. And then we have like a more narrow concentration mindset where we can, I guess, have that more focused targeting. In regards to shoutcasting, is having that broad external concentration mindset important for, I guess, picking up whatever's going on in the game?
I feel like being able to have the like various different levels of concentration is definitely an important factor, because there's so many different things going on the screen at any given point in time. Like, for example, outside of the individual player you might be spectating, you might see on the minimap, say in the top left-hand side of the corner, that their teammates are actually creeping around and setting up a really, really big play. Like, you might just be having your attention based on the one outlier player, really dependent on who your observer's taking a look at. So it's really important, especially in the storytelling aspect, to be able to talk about those outside factors as well, outside of what's obviously in front of the viewer's eyes on the screen.
And I guess, you know, is there also that demand to be able to quickly change topics? For example, as you said, if one team was sneaking around and then maybe there was a lurker trying to go for a gank and they, you know, maybe get a pick, being able to quickly transition?
It's definitely important to be able to quickly transition. I feel like if you've got a really good point going on with yourself or your shoutcasting partner, then you certainly should finalize that. But if obviously it is building up to, say, the MVP play, then you definitely do want to try and wrap things up as smoothly as you can in order to really get right into the action.
Yeah, that's really awesome. I definitely, from some of the streams I've watched, there's been, you know, some moments where some shoutcasters are really focused on something that's not really important. And you can clearly see on the map, maybe one team is really starting to go for an aggressive push into B, but they're still really focusing on something really else and that's irrelevant. And you can see the Twitch chat really starting to pop off, say, you know, why aren't you talking about that? So, you know, how do you really, I guess, figure out what to focus on?
So establishing proper focus really does take time. Like, as you shoutcast more and more, you really do start to pick up the little things that are a bit more important to, say, the viewer, as well as what professional players themselves would like to be seeing talked about. Because obviously at first you might just be commentating off what's right in front of you. Like, you might see the scoreboard, say player one gets a kill on player two and three, whereas then there's player four in the background who might be doing something a bit unusual. And it really just takes time to be able to step out of those scoreboard casting habits towards something which can really grow to be much greater.
Fantastic, yeah. So even just talking with you, you have such a really good natural, I mean, maybe that's what you've developed over time, but really good pacing and I guess just really good, you just naturally sound like a shoutcaster.
Well, I think someone actually said that in a Valorant game I was playing the other week as well. I was like, oh, well, funny that. Do you know this? Nah. yeah, it is all just comes with time, I suppose. Like after doing it over and over again, you really do incorporate it into how you naturally speak with people, because obviously you do have like different ways of speaking to different people depending on various situations, but yeah, it's important to be able to maintain professionalism.
Yeah, fantastic. And I guess just kind of rolling into, you know, the finish line here, you know, outside of shoutcasting, obviously you spend a lot of time focusing on, you know, your IT at uni. So is there any plans to further develop those IT areas?
So in terms of myself, after I finished studying IT as a whole, I really reevaluated my interest in the topic and found that I did obviously have more interest in other things, but it certainly is something that people can put to use, like having those external skills, which you may not think would be relevant to, say, esports, for example, actually may prove to be extremely relevant. Like, for example, I believe in the past I heard an organization owner actually speak and say that if you want to get into esports, it's important to have a degree, like, for example, in marketing, because that can be used to really push out the presence of a brand, like, for example, an esports organization.
Yeah, for sure. Myself personally, I'm finishing up my sport and exercise science degree. And originally I was really split between going into an honors pathway looking at esports. And that honors pathway looked at esports in regards to performance measuring. So maybe, you know, looking at heart rate or looking at breathing or looking at different game scenarios where I guess we can track different variables and compare and contrast between time, or going down more of a, I guess, well-being and rehabilitation counseling kind of pathway. And I've actually decided to go down more of that rehabilitation counseling pathway. And I guess I'm using this podcast as a way to get an insight into the industry. So I really appreciate, you know, talking to yourself, just getting that insight into one of the many elements of esports, such as shoutcasting, and then having multiple players on just to get more of that insight into the psychological and performance demands of esports. And then hopefully I can really transition into, I guess, maybe working with an esports team on the mental side of things, just because I have that kind of insight into how everything works.
I feel like a mental health coach for an esports team actually holds a high degree of importance. Like I've seen more recently that some teams of the higher caliber actually have started to incorporate the esports mental health coach into their team regime. And I feel like it really does hold such a high degree of importance, because you need to really be able to maintain the most positivity that you can overall, because obviously there's a lot of factors that do come into playing at that high level of competitive play. Like, for example, your team may have that slump period where it may not be the best of times. Like, it may be a drought in terms of winning, but even through those times, you just need to maintain composure, do the best you can, because there certainly will be bad times, but those will always lead towards even better times.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely agree with that. If I reflect on talking in episode one with Udisoft from the Direwolves, actually, he reflected at, you know, when he went to Worlds and just playing game on game on game, you have such that cognitive fatigue because you're basically sitting there so cognitively involved for such a multitude of hours. So it's one of those really things that I think is important to maintain really good mental health. And whether we see that in the OC region, probably not for the next couple of years at least, until maybe, you know, those kind of roles start to really get engaged with multiple teams. But it'll be really something interesting to see. So just wrapping up now, I know you've recently been, I saw you streaming on Twitch a while ago. Is Twitch an outlet for you that you like to explore?
Yeah, I certainly do like to explore Twitch itself. Like, I definitely push out as many shoutcasting broadcasts as I can. But outside of that, I do like to push my own personal brand by just engaging with the fans through like a personal stream, for example. So seeing a different side of myself outside of shoutcasting, because obviously when you're shoutcasting on a broadcast, you really do have to maintain the professional outlook on things. You really need to obviously mind what you're saying and how you're saying it. You need to obviously be focused as much as you possibly can on the broadcast. Whereas on a personal stream, you can really connect with your fans on a more personal level. They can ask you some questions they may not have had the opportunity to. And I feel like being able to push out your own brand through something like content creation in a stream, or even just creating, like, for example, a video series on YouTube, is really important for building up yourself.
Yeah, that's really awesome. That's really well said. And I guess for everyone listening, where can we find you on all your socials?
So you can find me at twitter.com/MattSE123, as well as twitch.tv/MattSE123.
Fantastic. Well, I really appreciate jumping on here and having a good talk with me, Matt. Just getting that really big insight into shoutcasting. It was something I was really interested in, because, you know, obviously playing games for such a long time, it's one of those external things that I really thought about, I really wanted to know more about. And I think some of the topics today we touched over was really awesome, just to provide that really insight for some of the listeners, maybe even trying to get into shoutcasting themselves. Yeah, so thank you very much for coming on here, Matt, and I look forward to seeing all the content and shoutcasting games you push out soon.
Yeah, thank you for having me, man. I really appreciate it, honestly. It's been an honor.
Awesome. Thank you very much, and take care, mate.
All right. You have a wonderful night, and I hope that your test comes back all right.
All righty. So, yeah, thanks very much for coming on, Matt, and for everyone listening, I hope you enjoyed this episode. It was definitely really in-depth in kind of understanding all the ins and outs of shoutcasting with some really handy tips along the way. This obviously being the premiere episode for Season 2, Episode 1, and I'm really excited to share with you guys some future episodes that we have. We have some really exciting guests, and that's going to be awesome, and I'm excited for you guys to join me along this journey of MindClickers, and let's see how we can grow it and see what we can do with it. So in the meantime, I will catch you in episode 2. Once again, if you made it this far, thank you very much, and make sure to stay up to date with everything coming out on Instagram at MindClickers and at Twitter and Facebook on MindClickers as well. I will see you in the next one. This has been your host,